Well, The Duke is a great film. So how did you get to be the producer on this? How did this all happen?
So it was about, it was in 2013, I got a random email from a guy called Christopher Bunton, telling me that he had this amazing story in his family and that his grandfather had stolen a painting from the National Gallery and held it to ransom to raise money for his campaign. And I thought, oh my gosh, that sounds like an incredible story. And he was looking for someone that might be interested to turn it into a film. And he said, you know, do you think this could be a good movie? And I thought it just sounded too good to be true, really. And so I did some research and it all checked out. And then I jumped on it and sort of negotiated the rights with the family and then started building the story and the project from there.
All right. What, did you organise the writer and all that sort of stuff, or tell me about
yeah.
that?
Yeah. So then I there was a lot of material to wade through because Kempton wrote memoirs that obviously unpublished, but were an amazing resource. We also had the court transcripts and the case files and Kempton's plays. So there was a huge amount of story, and it took some time for me to really immerse myself in all of that and find out what the story of the film would be. And so spent some time working on that. And then I took it to Pathé here in London, and they came on board to finance it. And then we set about bringing on board the writers. And we, because there was so much material, and I think because it's got this real combination of a family drama with a lot of heart and this fantastical heist and crackpot scheme with this really hilarious character at the centre of it all, there was quite a lot of material to deal with and to fit into a 90-minute film. And we approached Richard Bean, who's probably most famous for his play One Man, Two Governors, and has done a lot of theatre work. And he'd actually been working quite a lot, I mean, from way back on theatre and comedy sketches with Clive Coleman, who was a former barrister and had actually been the BBC's legal correspondent. And so the two of them were just this perfect package that kind of covered all of those sort of the head and heart and all of the elements that we were trying to squeeze into this story. And I think they did such a beautiful job navigating it all. Yeah.
I mean, it's a very John Mortimer style depth, hasn't it?
Yeah, that's interesting. Yeah. I think, yeah, you're right. And it's, I think that they, you know, Richard Bean is from Hull in the Northeast. He really, really understood the character of Kempton and that place and that time. And I think, and that was really important that we captured that authenticity and that it wasn't kind of just a rose tinted view of the past, which I think sometimes these period films can tend to be, and they don't really ring true. And because this was a true story and I was working with the family and had assured them that I was going to be faithful to their story, but also to the time and the place, which is really important in it.
Well, that's interesting to me because it's 1961, which is an absolutely pivotal period of time as it goes into, it's like you've taken, it's not just a true story, which is compelling, but it's about England, isn't it? It's
yeah.
This amazing film that is full of characters and class and England at a point in history before now. It's amazing.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, to me, obviously I wasn't in England at the time. I wasn't even alive at the time. But, yes. So that was a lot of research for me to get into. But I think people think of England in the 60s and immediately think of the Beatles and the swinging 60s. But really, 1961 was still very much in the shadow of the war. And it was that moment where things were starting to recover a little bit. And there was sort of a glimpse of that kind of liberation, and that swinging 60s was on the horizon, this sense that maybe people could stand up for themselves a little bit, maybe they could dream a little bit bigger. Was it felt like there were glimpses of that.
I mean his revolution was that the elderly wouldn't have to pay for a TV license, for God's sake.
Yeah. Yeah. Which sounds completely crazy, but I think when you understand where that came from.
No, but everything's so locked down. England's so locked down.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. No, it was very limiting, you know. And so even just the idea that he had his whole life had these dreams that, you know, frankly were beyond his station, that he felt like he was going to get to speak to the world, whether it was through his campaigns or through his plays that he wrote. And he never let go of that dream. And I mean, I guess ultimately it's kind of been fulfilled now that the film has been made.
Yeah, I know, because he's a great, great person.
Yeah, he is. I mean, you know, he must have been a complete nightmare to live with.
Yeah, yeah.
I've
met people like this.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. And he's just a wonderful, larger-than-life character. And it was a real gift having his memoirs and all of his plays, his writing to delve into, because, you know, we just got such a strong sense of his voice and his passion and determination, completely dog-headed. And, yeah, I mean, Dorothy was a bit of a saint, I think, putting
but
up with
But also you were able to get such great people to play the parts. I mean, it's great to see Helen Mirren and Jim Broadbent acting their little hearts out. It was just fantastic.
Yeah, I mean, it was amazing to come to work every morning and just watch them have front row seats, watching them do their thing. They were really incredible. And I think Jim, we had in mind from the very beginning, because I mean, you might have seen the picture of the real Kempton Bunton, but there is a real physical likeness, but also Jim has just got that, you know, he's got that humanity and that warmth to him, but he's also got a real cheekiness and a humor. And he just seemed perfect from day one. So we were very lucky that he recognized himself in it and all of the qualities of the script and came on board. And then Helen, you know, obviously that really casting against type, and we just didn't know if she'd have an interest in playing this kind of, you know, playing a domestic cleaner who's gonna look pretty plain, and we're so used to seeing her in a gown.
Weren't they living, recognizing their past? They would have been very young when this period of history was. I mean, they weren't famous all their lives.
No, of course. But still, I mean, it's, you know, it's quite something to ask an actress of her stature who can pick and choose anything to, like, come and wear no makeup and hang out in the Northeast during the winter.
actors like to act.
They do. And, you know, we almost didn't send it to her because we thought, "Would is she really gonna go for this?" But it was a very quick yes from her. She loved the writing, and you're right that she recognized her own childhood within it. I mean, she was from she's from London, but from a very big working class family, and I think her mother was the youngest of 13 children. So she really gravitated towards that family drama and those dynamics of a family that really fallen on hardship and had a difficult time, but found a way to make the most and stay together.
I must admit, I felt, I mean, because I'm in Australia, right, and I'm watching this and I'm thinking, not only is it a fantastic film on so many levels, but given the what's going on politically in England at the moment, it's almost like this film is like a beacon. It's like people remember who you are, sort yeah. of a film. Is it like that? Is it being taken that way?
Yeah, I mean, I think it has been. We've had a phenomenal response from audiences here, and it is interesting because we had a great response from critics, which is, you know, a big sigh of relief, obviously. But until people see it, you just don't know how it's going to be taken in by the wider public. And you're right that it does seem to have really found a place in people's hearts, that there is something that they recognize about what it is that endures, what it is that delights us, and how and you know, there's a very strong community message within it, because Kempton was really all about fighting for the little guys, for those unheard voices, and making sure that as a society we were looking out for those that are the most vulnerable rather than those that have the most privilege. We always know, we can always hear from them and know how they're doing, but it's the ones that that might be isolated or ignored that he was really fighting for. And I think especially after the last couple of years that we've all had, that idea of a community really only being as strong as its most vulnerable members is very pertinent.
The script in the courtroom where he gets to speak, and I'm assuming they were the words he actually uttered, incredibly profound. I have to say, he's a very yeah. smart guy.
Yeah. It wasn't all lifted directly from the transcripts. Actually, probably the most unbelievable bits were like the bucket shop sequence. That was all him. But in terms of his philosophy, there were certain things that he said and he alluded to within the trial, but then also because we had his memoirs, we were able to mine a bit deeper into his thought process and his view on the world. And so, I agree that the writers did a really, really beautiful job of articulating all of that in the court. And it was really, you know, that was finally, he got his stage, he got his audience in court one of the Old Bailey, and he was not going to miss that opportunity to put on a show and say what he wanted to say. And so, yeah, reading the court transcripts was incredible, because he really made the most of that opportunity.
And we can't forget that not just is the set designs, the way it's been put together, as well as the supporting cast, incredibly strong. You've got a very strong cast.
Yeah, and really that's down to the wonderful Roger Michell, because he was so popular with actors because he had such a he loved actors and just had such a kindness and an openness and had a real reputation amongst actors for just letting people, just bringing out the best in them and letting them do their best work. And so, you know, that was just a huge privilege to be able to work with such an incredible cast and see them work with Roger as well.
Mm. So it's got it's obviously been very popular in England. I mean, we're now seeing it here, but it's very popular there.
Yeah, it has been a big hit here, which has been really nice because obviously, you know, cinemas have had a bit of a rough trot, and especially for that older audience that this film is really geared towards. A lot of people have come back to the cinema for the first time to see The Duke, and I think considering it is all about community and it is full of a lot of laughs, it's a great one to see in the cinema. So it's been really heartening that it's had a good showing here.
And I was really surprised. I mean, I expected it to be well done and quirky, but I hadn't quite realised how profound it was going to be. I think it's quite a profound film. And and the timing is so important. I think England reassessing itself, and I mean, especially with Brexit and stuff like that, people have been very... I got the impression that there are, you know, a small majority of people who are thoroughly Brexited, but people hadn't really realised what it was they were getting into. And it was all about identity. They were feeling they were losing their identity. And this film actually discusses those issues. It's really important.
Yeah, it does. And it's interesting that the film has appealed to people on both sides of the political spectrum, which I think has been really interesting because it is sort of, I guess it is, as you say, it's not about taking sides. It's about remembering who we are as a society and what that means. So it's been really interesting to see that how different people from different political persuasions have gravitated to it and felt that they recognize themselves and their struggles within it.
I also thought that one of the reasons for why such high caliber actors would be so interested in doing it was because it gave them an opportunity to sort of express what they wanted to express. You know what I mean? Like everybody needs to have their say in this, you know?
Yeah. I think that, of course, you know, they gravitated to the overall message of the film, but I think, in a way it's funny how, you know, we finished the film in 2020, and we were shooting it in 2019, and you know, obviously in that time its resonance has grown, really. I mean, the film itself hasn't changed, but it has taken on a different you know, perhaps a stronger meaning. And so I think, I mean, to be honest, I think that the cast was really drawn to the script that is just so delicious and fun. And working with Roger was a huge draw. And then, you know, we've all just kind of watched it grow in that time. And it is fascinating.
It also is a little bit like the Erling Studios best comedy, I've got to admit.
And that's what we were leaning on. Was, I mean, we looked a lot at the, you know, the new wave of British cinema, like Saturday Night, Sunday Morning and A Taste of Honey. We looked at all of those those films as reference, but then very much the Ealing comedies and that idea of the, you know, the little man speaking truth to power, yeah. And the joy to be had in that. So yeah, we had lots of great references to draw on, a great cinematic history.
Yeah, I was telling someone about my daughter, in fact, about the cleaners who, Roger Morley and the cleaners who did the Snock Market, you know, that whole idea of the little people talking to power.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much for talking to me.
Thanks so much, Annie. Take care.
You too.
Bye.